listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Three things. Number one, over at Huffington Post, Alifair Burke, the daughter of James Lee Burke, but in her own right, and James Lee Burke used to write her into his novels when she was a little kid. He's one of my favorite writers. Anyhow, she is now a criminal defense lawyer and a damn good one and a very, very good writer. I've read two of her novels. She's also a very good writer. She is suggesting over at the Huffington Post that basically the jury instructions that were decided upon before the trial by the judge made it all but certain that George Zimmerman would walk. How so? Well, in Florida, you cannot claim self-defense if you initiated the event from which you are defending yourself and did not try to get the hell out of the way. And when the state, the prosecutor, said we want that included in the jury instructions, Don West, the defense lawyer, stood up and said, quote, well, let me point out, as a matter of law, following someone on foot or by car is not against the law. That cannot be considered provocation under the law. Force means physical force or the threat of physical force. It would be error and, frankly, promoting miscarriage of justice if the state were to argue that to the jury. End of quote. Now, Alifair Burke says, so, and then the judge said, okay, the court's not going to give it. In other words, that jury instruction was not given to the jury, that you may not consider a self-defense claim, defense, if George Zimmerman initiated the event from which he had to end up defending himself. Okay, now why? Well, Alifair Burke says, watch the video. Watch how Don West emphasizes the word error. Error is a word used to invoke fear in trial court judges that they will be reversed on appeal. Coupled with a previous phrase as a matter of law, West was suggesting to the court that delivery of an aggressor exemption would be the kind of decision that would lead to reversal on appeal if Zimmerman were convicted. No trial judge wants to be referred, even reversed, even in a case less controversial than this. Okay, I leave you with that as item number one. Item number two. Here's what the jury instructions would have been before the Stand Your Ground law was passed in Florida. Before the Stand Your Ground laws would have were passed. The defendant cannot justify the use of force likely to cause death or great bodily harm unless he uses every reasonable means within his power and consistent with his own safety to avoid the danger before resorting to that force. The fact that the defendant was wrongfully attacked cannot justify his use of force likely to cause death or great bodily harm if by retreating he could have avoided the need to use that force. That's how the jury instructions used to be. Since Stand Your Ground was passed, the new jury instruction is, and I quote from Judge, what's her name? Judge Nelson. If George Zimmerman was not engaged in an unlawful activity and was attacked in any place where he had a right to be, he had no duty to retreat and had the right to stand his ground and meet force with force, including deadly force, if he reasonably believed that it was necessary to do so to prevent death or great bodily harm to himself or another, or to prevent the commission of a forcible felony. You get this? Before Stand Your Ground, he had the quote, the fact that the defendant was wrongfully attacked cannot justify his use of force likely to cause death or great bodily harm if by retreating he could have avoided the need to use that force. Under the old law, you got to retreat. Under Stand Your Ground, pull out the gun and blow the kid away. Meanwhile, we've got commentators. I don't know if you grabbed this clip, Jim, from this Media Matters piece. Did you get this? Do either of you guys get this audio? Okay. We've got, in fact, I can play it from here. This is from CNN. Just listen to this.
important. Stand your ground. We all talk about it. It did not play a role in this jury's verdict. Didn't need to use that law. It wasn't even argued at trial. Now,
wrong. That was CNN. Wrong. Okay, on top of that, consider this. Number three, George Zimmerman kept close watch over his neighborhood. When black men walked through or even drove through the area, he alerted the police over and over and over again. Finally, exasperated that they always got away, he went out on a rainy night armed with a loaded gun and the Stand Your Ground law, looking for anybody who should not be in his largely white neighborhood. The South has a long history of this sort of thing. Today they're called neighborhood watches. They used to be called slave patrols. Prior to the Civil War and Reconstruction, the main way Southern states maintained the institution of slavery was through local and statewide militias known as slave patrols. These patrols were in many states required monthly duty, in some cases weekly duty, for Southern white men ages 17 to 47, whether they owned slaves or not. Slave patrollers traveled, usually on horseback, equivalent today would be George Zimmerman's SUV, through the countryside looking for African Americans, quote, who were not where they belong, end quote. When the patrollers found black people in places where, quote, they did not belong, end quote, punishment ranged from beatings to repatriation of their slave owners to death by being whipped, hung, or shot. Some of the most comprehensive reports on the nature and extent of these slave patrols came from interviews done by the WPA. Remember the WPA? Frank FDR started it with the Works Progress Administration. They started something called the National Writers Project. And they went out and interviewed former slaves and the children of former slaves who were still alive in 1935 in the American South. And they documented these stories. The WPA's Georgia Writers Union, the Georgia Writers Project Savannah unit produced a brilliant summary of stories taken from people who were alive, most of them as children during the time of slavery, about their interactions with slave patrollers. In fact, the title of the report was Drums and Shadows, Survival Stories Among the Georgia Coastal Negroes. That's the title of the piece. It was published back in 1937. Many other oral and written histories compiled by the WPA Writers Project are now over at the Library of Congress. You can easily find this stuff. You can Google it or DuckDuckGo it. Sally Hayden published a brilliant book called Slave Patrols, Law and Violence in Virginia and the Carolinas. She quotes a lot of these WPA studies of how the slave patrollers would beat, whip, or otherwise abuse African Americans who were found off the plantation. Women were routinely raped. Men were usually beaten with sticks or whips. Here's what one story written by the WPA back in 1935. Slaves might beg to be left out of a whipping from the patrol, hoping that mercy or caprice might avoid a beating. Patrollers sometimes toyed with the slave, threatening a whipping, then let the slaves go free. The inherent arbitrariness of punishment added to the fear most slaves felt when they encountered slave patrols. One former bondsman, Alex Woods, recalled how a patrol reacted to a begging slave. He said that the patrollers wouldn't allow slaves to call on de Lord when they were whipping them, but they let them say, oh, pray, master. I'm quoting from the slave. Now the WPA. The harsh punishment a patrol could administer caused one former slave to say that meeting with a patrol was like being sold to a new master, something a slave would avoid at any cost. Few things compare to the agony a slave endured from a patroller beating. One ex-slave from South Carolina recalled what people heard when she was born. Her mother, quote, screamed as if being beaten by patrollers, end quote. It's like in the Deep South, the more things change, the more they stay the same. The slave patrol is alive and well. It was called the slave patrol until the 1860s. Then it was called the KKK. Now apparently it's called the Neighborhood Watch.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And George Zimmerman was out there on slave patrol. And he got away with it. Tom Hartman here with you, and Debbie Hines is with us, our favorite legal commentator, a trial lawyer, former prosecutor, legal political commentator over at LegalSpeaks.com. Hey, Debbie, welcome.
Hi, Tom.
Welcome.
Nice to be back, yes.
Welcome back, I should say. I'm not sure if we have your video. I think we've lost some of our internet connection.
Yeah, but, we lost the internet connection.
Yeah.
I'm up, but
yeah,
trying
but that's fine. You know, just having your voice is fine, and we've got a nice picture of you that we'll get and throw it up on the screen. A couple things that I wanted to go through with you. The first is Stand Your Ground. This is over. This is at the top of MediaMatters.org right now, and they say that the jury instructions that would have been given prior to the Stand Your Ground law being passed would have read, the defendant cannot justify the use of force likely to cause death or great bodily harm unless he used every reasonable means within his power and consistent with his own safety to avoid the danger before resorting to that force. The fact that the defendant was wrongfully attacked cannot justify his use of force likely to cause death or great bodily harm if by retreating he could have avoided the need to use that force. That was the law prior to the passage of Stand Your Ground. Since Stand Your Ground, now the jury instruction is, and I quote from the judge in this case, Judge Nelson, if George Zimmerman was not engaged in an unlawful activity and was attacked in any place where he had a right to be, he had no duty to retreat, and he had the right to stand his ground and meet force with force, including deadly force, if he reasonably believed it was necessary to do so to prevent death or great bodily harm to himself or another, or to prevent the commission of a forcible felony. Virtually all of that coming from the Stand Your Ground law. And yet, we get these bozos like the folks over on CNN who I can't play it now because I've lost my internet, who are saying, oh, you know, there was no Stand Your Ground part to this thing. Debbie?
Yes, I'm here.
I'm curious your thoughts on that.
You know, Tom, in the final analysis with this jury, this case, I don't really know how much difference it would have made. And that's just my honest opinion about the whole thing.
Okay.
Because there was enough there, notwithstanding the jury instructions, to, you know, convict him. Because there still was the self, if he's the, and I'm not looking at the jury instructions, but there still is a component that if you are the aggressor, that you still, that's when you have the duty to reasonably retreat. If you were the aggressor, such as he were. So that's not to stand your ground. That's their traditional self-defense instruction.
Well, and this leads to the second piece, and this is this piece by Alifair Burke over at Huffington Post. She's the she's a criminal defense lawyer and the daughter of James Lee Burke, the novelist. And she writes that, the initial aggressor instruction, where if you're the initial aggressor, you cannot, you're prevented from using a self-defense. And the state wanted that instruction read to the jury that, you know, they could not consider a self-defense defense if Zimmerman was determined to be the initial aggressor. And Don West said, and I, quoting from the transcript, well, let me point out, Judge, as a matter of law, someone following somebody on foot or by car is not against the law. That cannot be considered provocation under the law. Force means physical force or the threat of physical force. It would be error, and he said it very loudly, and frankly, promoting miscarriage of justice if the state were allow that to be argued to the jury. And then Judge Nelson said, the defense does not want to give the initial aggressor exemption. The state does want to give it. This court is not going to give it. And Alifair Burke says, watch how West emphasized the word error. Error is a word used to invoke fear in trial court judges that they will be reversed on appeal. Coupled with his previous phrase as a matter of law, West was suggesting to the court that delivery of an aggressor exemption would be the kind of decision that would lead to reversal on appeal. And he actually quoted an appeals court case, but he quoted the case wrong. Thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, Judge Nelson knows the law. She's a trial attorney. I don't think she has any fear of anything that the defense attorney or the prosecution would have said to her. So I don't think that that's basically the issue. And yes, judges do routinely, pro or against you, make rulings that are not correct as we feel that they're correct on the jury instructions. But I just still think that that's just such a finite nuance. I mean, I know the jury had to find, you know, the verdict in accordance with the law, but at the end of the day, I just don't think that this jury would have found a way to find George Zimmerman not guilty, because there was enough there even under the instructions, to find him guilty. I mean, the jury basically disregarded all of the testimony of everyone, relied on the testimony of John Good, who's the only witness that said that he saw George Zimmerman on the top, and then, of course, using, I don't know how much they used of George Zimmerman's testimony, but they had to disregard a lot of witnesses to come to the conclusion that they came to.
Yeah, especially Rachel Gentile. So by
exactly.
This jury, are you saying five white women and a Hispanic woman?
I'm saying a jury.
Or a jury lacking any African-American members.
Well, I'm going to be more specific because I always feel that with a jury, that's why we take so much time to select a jury, that the devil is in the details. He's in the details. So let me be clear. There were two white women on the jury that the state struck. For whatever reason, I'm not privy to know why, but they struck them. So we can assume that the state would have thought that those two women would not have been favorable for them. But once the defense objected to it on what's known as a Batson challenge, where you have to come up with some racial, race-neutral reason for striking them, they were allowed on the jury. Okay, you got six. You got two that the state didn't want. And then you have another juror who basically says that when she was asked about the protest in Sanford, she referred to the peaceful protest as rioting. I think that says a lot about what she feels about the case. So when I'm saying these jurors, I'm talking about these specific jurors that were on this.
So you're saying that there's clear evidence of at least one of the jurors going in prejudiced to begin with and two others in all probability.
Correct. Two, that the prosecution wanted stricken, and based on all the information that they had about them, there was a reason why they wanted them stricken.
Remarkable. Debbie Hines, LegalSpeaks.com. You can read read Debbie's blog or her comments over there. Debbie, you're brilliant. Thank you for dropping by.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to be here.
Always
Thank
great
you.
Talking with you. I'll see you on TV.
Okay.
We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Indeed. And although if you can't get through, just wait a little bit and try again, because it seems that our phones have crashed too. We'll be back. 28 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I find this whole thing very, very fascinating. And by the way, if you're trying to call into the program right at the moment, don't bother. We have Comcast, right? Comcast, you know, ain't Comcast wonderful? Yeah. No, their service sucks. And at least at the moment. And so we have no telephones. So, whoop. Just came back up again. Hang on just a minute. It kind of comes and goes. So actually, you could try calling in. You might get through. Who knows? Comcast says that they're working on the issue. Anyhow, these are the two biggest stories that are not big stories. Is number one that the judge did not instruct the jury that under Florida law, if you initiate a situation in which you feel that you need to use a self-defense defense, and you failed to get out of the way when you had an opportunity to, like maybe when the police said, don't follow that guy, you cannot use a self-defense defense. And George Zimmerman used a self-defense defense and used it successfully. And the judge, left that on the table when, frankly, it should not even have been part of the consideration, number one. And number two, the judge's instructions said Zimmerman had no duty to retreat and had the right to stand his ground. So here's the question. Who killed Trayvon Martin? Was it George Zimmerman? Or was it the Koch brothers and all the other people who fund the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which promotes the Stand Your Ground laws? Seriously. You can read all the details over at MediaMatters.org. It's the top story. It's by Matt Gertz. It's titled Stand Your Ground in the Zimmerman Defense. And it's quite straightforward. The It is very straightforward. Not only that, this is from the Wall Street Journal. The Stand Your Ground law says not only can you meet force with force, you know, even if under the old law you should have tried to avoid force, and not only can you kill somebody if they're willing, threatening to beat you up, the Stand Your Ground law says that, which is why Zimmerman got off. But it also says, the Stand Your Ground laws also say that you can't be sued for doing it. This is a quote from the Wall Street Journal. Mr. Zimmerman can seek immunity from civil lawsuits under Florida's so-called Stand Your Ground law, something his attorney has said he plans to do. In effect, there will be no civil suits, says Tamara Lav, L-A-V-E, I'm assuming it's pronounced Lav, a University of Miami law professor. If there is a civil suit, it will be dismissed and future ones will be barred. Amazing. Dawn in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, Dawn, what's up? Oh, the phones just went down again. Just as I put Dawn on the phones went down. I'm sorry, Dawn. Daryl, I'm assuming you're not there either. No, nobody. No, they're all dead. Okay. See, this is what it's like. You know, okay, we looked around actually to get other sources of, you know, good internet service here in Washington D.C. And it's like, you know, you're very, very limited because we live in basically a monopoly culture here in the United States, thanks to Ronald Reagan, no longer enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. And so we've got some of the crummiest, slowest, and least reliable internet service in the country right now. But enough of that. The slave patrols. In my opinion, this just never went away. From the 1600s, for five centuries, I mean, you know, Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492, right? 500 years later would be 1992. And Columbus was the first guy who took slaves. So for five centuries, we have had this culture in the United States of, based on the color of your skin, what are you doing in my neighborhood? Which is basically what George Zimmerman said to Trayvon Martin. What are you doing here? It used to be the slave patrols. The slave patrols used to go out looking for folks. In fact, here are the regulations. This is from Rowan County, North Carolina, 1825. Patrols shall be appointed, at least four in each captain's district, number one. Number two, it shall be their duty, for two of their number at least, to patrol their respective districts once in every week. In failure thereof, they shall be subject to the penalties prescribed by law. Number three, they shall have the power to inflict corporal punishment if two be present agreeing thereto. Number four, now number three, I mean corporal punishment, the slave patrollers had the power to whip and beat the slaves. Stand Your Ground, the American Legislative Exchange Council, the Koch brothers, ALEC, expanded that to, and you can kill them too. Number four, one patroller shall have power to seize any Negro slave who behaves insolently to a patroller or otherwise unlawfully or suspiciously. Got it? And hold such slave in custody until he can bring together a requisite number of patrollers to act in the business. In other words, to safely beat the bejesus out of this slave. And fifth, previous to entering on their duties, slave patrollers shall call on some acting magistrate and take the following oath, to wit, I, Joe Blow, appointed one of the patrol by the county court of Rowan for Captain So-and-So's company, do hereby swear that I will faithfully execute the duties of a patroller to the best of my ability according to law and the regulations of the county court. Amazing. Ed, in Erie, Pennsylvania. The phones are back up for a few seconds. Let's see how long it lasts.
Hey, Abe Lincoln said one time, any people anywhere being inclined and having the power have the right to rise up and shake off the existing government, form a new one that suits them better. Any portion of such people that can make to revolutionize and make their own so much of the territory as they inhabit, I hate that they can, may revolutionize and make their own. Anyhow, time for the North.
Where did you get that quote from Abe Lincoln?
It's in the Wars of America.
When did he say it, and what was the context?
He was a senator at the senator at the time.
State senator.
It was during the debate over slavery and, you know.
Are you sure it was not in the debate over the Mexican American War? Because he was pretty upset with.
Actually, you're right. It was. It was over the Mexican American War.
Yeah, because he was totally opposed to the Mexican American War.
Yeah, he called it Polk's War or something
yep,
like that.
That's right.
Yeah, but anyhow, with Trayvon Martin, the civil rights changes they've just made recently down south, our taxes, our present Congress, if we seceded from the Union, the entire North, you know, and just stopped giving them money, because that's all they are, is sucking money out of our pockets, those southern states.
Yeah.
We could, you know, we could rebuild our infrastructure, restore import taxes, sign real trade agreements with countries that pay people a fair wage, you know. You know, become America again. You know, we could start manufacturing.
So you're suggesting it's time for the North to secede?
Yes, yes. Throw the Southerns right out. You know, if they want to live in the back in the 1850s, let them.
Yeah.
You know?
Amazing. Amazing. Okay, thank you, Ed. Thanks for sharing that. Diane in Arcadia, Florida. Hey, Diane, what's up?
Yes. Hi. I love you to death, but I don't know what's wrong today. I was traveling around doing what I have to do here in Arcadia, which we're a very small town, and I never heard any equation to where Neighborhood Watch had its roots in the South with watching black people. Now, I am white. I am married to an African-American man, all right, and I think we need to stop talking about the Zimmerman case. He was tried. It did what it had to do, okay, whether we agree or we don't agree. But the more we inflame this, and to me that was inflammatory, insinuating that the South now has Neighborhood Watch because we used to watch the black people in the South.
Well, that's what George Zimmerman was doing. Every single time he called the police, it was because there was a black person in his neighborhood. Are you trying to tell me that that's just a coincidence?
Well, what I'm trying to tell you was, is it a coincidence that every time they had something happen in that neighborhood, it was black?
No, you do not know that for a fact. All you know is that the one case that the defense put into evidence was apparently somebody who was black. According to the testimony of a witness, they were not caught. So no, you cannot say that every single case. I mean that no. And let me tell you about the story of John White when we come back. John White. Well, it's the exact opposite of the George Zimmerman story. I think you'll find it fascinating.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Tony, anybody who doesn't think that this has been about race all along did not bother to listen to what George Zimmerman said on the phone as he got out of his car. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Dawn in Chicago, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Dawn, what's up?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling because I love your program, and I just wanted to make a comment on the topic that you're speaking about now. The Trayvon Martin case, I think, is a total travesty, and my heart is with the family of that young man. I think what happened was just tragic. And given the fact that this man was told by the 911 operator to stop, the jury has spoken. Now, I've heard on another radio station here in Chicago that one of the jury members has a book deal coming out. Her and her husband have already gotten a publisher and all of that.
Yep.
So I'm just confused now. I mean, was this was the verdict already guilty before the trial started, because this was still more books. You know, there's so many other questions. And before I hang up, I'd just like to say that in the African-American community in Chicago, people are killing and shooting at each other left and right. And I really think they need to wake up and look at this George Zimmerman case as an example of them. And I'm not a racist or anything, but I'm just saying that it's right now, it's them doing exactly to us what we do. So why, this man probably felt like, why not? They do it to each other all the time. We need to wake up.
Who does what to whom? You're talking black people shoot other black people, and therefore this is okay? Is that what you're saying?
No, oh no, absolutely not. I'm not saying it's okay. The exact opposite, actually. I'm saying that this happened, with this thing happening to Trayvon Martin, maybe George Zimmerman's thought process was they do it to each other all the time, so why not? I'm not saying that's what happened.
Oh, you're thinking that was the juror's thought process. Yeah, this one juror has, here's the headline from Alternet. Juror who found Zimmerman innocent cashing in with book deal called Trayvon Martin, quote, a boy of color, end quote.
Yeah, I mean, who uses those terms?
Yeah, well, you know, typically racists use those kind of terms. Dawn, thank you for the call. Steve in Hialeah, Florida. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. What's
up? I find this very sad, what went on, and it's in northern Florida. It's very different than the Florida I grew up in, South Florida. But I heard that if Trayvon family takes Zimmerman to the next level on this, to find him, you know, financially.
To a civil court, the way that OJ went to civil court.
Correct. That if they find him, give him amnesty under the new law.
Right.
Then is the Trayvon family then liable for their legal costs?
I have no idea. According to the Wall Street Journal, under the Stand Your Ground law in Florida, if you have been freed in the criminal court, you cannot be charged in a civil court, period. So no court case can be brought forward. Whether you could counterclaim for lawyer's fees or things like that, I don't have a clue. I'm guessing that there wouldn't be any lawyer's fees if there's no possibility of a case, although there may be some investment in a lawyer to try and get things started. But the whole thing, in my mind, is a travesty. It's just an absolute travesty, the fact that Stand Your Ground even got passed down there. Robert in Cuamato, New Mexico. Am I saying that right, Robert?
Cuamato. Good morning.
Hey, what's up?
Hey. I'm a native Floridian, and I just want to remind everyone that there's a lot of reverse racism down there, and I'm really glad to be out of it. And I went to school there from elementary school to high school.
By reverse racism, what do you mean?
There's a lot of race people who are black who are racist.
Who don't like white people.
Well, exactly. And I do believe that Trayvon Martin did the same kind of thing when he saw a white man watching him, and that's a no-no. I know it for a fact.
So Trayvon Martin should have been shot because he did not like a white guy, following him.
I say that he should have went home like he was supposed to be.
Like a good little black boy, right?
No, because, you know, it's not really about that.
It sure sounds to me like that's what you're saying it's about, Robert.
No, I'm talking about what I'm trying to say. And the bottom line is that George Zimmerman was attacked. And that's pretty obvious from the evidence.
And Trayvon Martin wasn't? He's still walking around among us?
Well, that's kind of his fault, I'm sorry to say.
Because he had the audacity to walk home from the 7-Eleven? Are you serious? Do you really mean to say that, Robert? I'm just, it blows my mind that anybody would even assert that. Gordon in Redding, California.